When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. This week we chat with Montreal's Lucy Gervais about her favorite album, Bill Burr's Let It Go. Yes, we're chatting about America's favorite guy who looks like he should be a firefighter this week on Comedy Album Book Club. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in. It's me, Matt, your host, and I had an awesome time chatting with Lucy Gervais. You may have seen her around the Montreal and Toronto comedy circuits. Super funny, super hilarious. And we talked about Bill Burr's Let It Go. Bill Burr released Let It Go in September of 2010, and it was recorded at the Fillmore in San Francisco. Bill himself was born in June of 1968. And he just has that vibe that looks like he should be a fireman in Boston. It just exudes it when he was cast in the Pete Davidson film. That was just like, yeah, of course, that's perfect casting. And we have a great chat because, you know, Bill Burr's outside of my comfort zone. He's not the kind of thing I usually listen to. Just no judgment. Just generally not my bag, but I really enjoyed this album. I've always felt, you know, he's super funny and just not my bag, but Lucy helped me see the light, and I had a great time. So stay tuned, and thanks for listening to Comedy Album Book Club.
So I decided not to go home for the holidays. That's what I'm really trying to tell you here. No, I did. I kind of came to this epiphany. I'm like, man, I'm 41 years old. My dad had 5 kids by the time he's my age. I got to get on with my life here. So I was like going, you know what? I'm not working Thanksgiving. I'm not working Christmas. I'm not working New Year's. And it was like the middle of October. I was like, wait a minute. What about Halloween? Then my brain was like, you know what? This. I'm getting a pumpkin. Right? That's how angry my brain is. It can't be just like, you know what? Hey, let's get a pumpkin. It's gonna be, you know what? This. Let's get a pumpkin. I started thinking, carving that I'm handing out candy to the kids. I'm meeting them at the door. Hey, what are you supposed to be, huh? Oh yeah, full-size Snickers. Bam! Who does that? Who does that? Nobody. Nobody. I will break your bag with my candy. Huh? AC/DC pumpkin. You ever seen that before? You haven't, right? You tell all your friends when you've seen that. Look at you, lean to one side. That's heavy. Here's another candy bar. You look like dumbbells. Walk right down the stairs. This is how much of a maniac I am. Do you know, this is all true. It took me 4 trips to go to the supermarket to finally be able to buy this goddamn pumpkin. Because every time I would walk in there to get it, I'd be thinking all these happy thoughts. This is a great thing. I'm embracing the holidays. It's going to bring me and my girlfriend together. This is a very loving thing to do when I reach out and grab it. And all I'd hear in the back of my head is, what are you, a And immediately, I had to turn around and walk out.
Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. Today, we are joined by Lucy Gervais, Montreal-based comedian, the host of The Lucy Show, has appeared at Just for Laughs and is all around awesome person. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So what inspired you to choose Let It Go by Bill Burr?
So of all of my favorite stand-up specials, I think this is the one that made me laugh the hardest. And I remember listening to this album for the very first time. And if I could tell the story.
Yeah, please.
Awesome. Okay. So this was before I moved to Montreal. I was still living in Toronto. So before I moved to Montreal, I was on a mega bus from Montreal to Toronto. It's a 6-hour bus ride. It really sucks. And looking out the window is only so fun for so long. So I thought, okay, I'll just listen to some stand-up specials. That's a great way to pass the time when you're on a boring bus ride. And I didn't have any Bill Burr. Like, I hadn't listened to a ton of his specials beginning to end. I'd seen clips. I'd seen entire jokes, but never a whole special or a whole album. So I thought I would give this one a shot. It was really just on a whim. I picked Let It Go. And I laughed the entire hour. I was dying and I was laughing so hard, except I was on a bus full of people and I had to stifle my laughter so hard. Like, I was holding onto my face. I had tears coming down my eyes. Like, I looked crazier than I would have if I just laughed, but it was like so physically difficult to just like try to stay quiet, but I couldn't help myself. Like, it was just so funny. I looked like such a maniac, just like my face wet with tears, shaking, grabbing my own, like, the front of my mouth, trying to keep myself quiet. So for me, I'm like, that's a memory that stands out in terms of listening to comedy specials in general, because usually I'm just on my way somewhere in a car ride and a this or that, nothing that memorable happens. But this one in particular really stands out in my mind. The memory of listening to it for the first time. And every time I re-listen to it, I don't have as visceral a reaction because, you know, I've listened to it. Nothing beats that first time, eh?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's still one of my favorites. I still think it's so funny.
Yeah. And I mean, if he had seen you traveling and doing that, I'm sure you'd have made it into his opening.
Yeah.
Animals in when he's traveling kind of thing. So that's, you're loving it. So that's great. Like, yeah. It's weird seeing, like, I listened to it and watched the special, and it's weird seeing him so young.
Like, it's a full head of hair.
Full head of hair.
Yeah.
Doesn't have the goatee that he has now. And it's just
the dress shirt, the silky dress shirt. That was a Bill Burr staple for that era.
It's so incongruous from what he evolved into. Mm-hmm. And there's like certain comedians that just look like firemen. And I mean that he goes to play a fireman later on in life, but he has that look as like him and Dennis Leary, just both
for sure
exude Boston Fire Department energy.
Yeah, for sure. And like, you see, like, when Bill Burr does other stuff, like when he did F is for Family, you know, you really see his stand-up influencing, his point of view influencing the storylines and this and that. He's a unique guy, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to bring up F is for Family because it's like, you very much get, when he starts getting into the vibes about family, like the bits and both ends of that, like the pouring the water on the kid, but also like how much, you know, his wife drives, or his girlfriend at that time, mm-hmm. but later has drives him nuts. But at the same time, he's a totally horrible person in his mind at that time. It's like, you see that all through F is for Family, like yeah. that, those kinds of threads. And it's funny because like 3 years later, he would be married to his girlfriend at that time. And shortly after that, they had kids. So it's sort of like almost prescient some of the jokes that he was making there. But, you know, the thing I really find interesting about Bill Burr is like he has this quote about how he wants to make everyone laugh. Like he saw Rodney Dangerfield as one of his first comedy shows. And he's like, he loved it. Then he saw Eddie Murphy like right after that. And he's like, well, Rodney Dangerfield was funny, but his audience were just all the same middle-class white people. Whereas Eddie Murphy had an audience full of all of these different people and all of them laughing and something for everyone. And that's what he wanted to do. And I kind of feel like this album and the special is like that. It's mm-hmm. it's got something for everyone in there.
You can hear him talking to the people who might be mad at the jokes he's making.
Yes.
Many times. Anytime. And it's always a similar thread. It's always when he gets close to talking about women. Mm-hmm. And talking about women in a way that some women in the room might be like, how dare you? That's going too far. Like he's getting so close to the line and you can feel the tension, especially in his closing joke. That is where he does actually describe like how he would want to like beat up his girlfriend, which he actually does a couple times. So he knows he's getting right on the line. He knows he's getting on the line of, I am joking about domestic violence. And then he has a moment of self-deprecation, says, I'm not really going to do that. That moment of like kind of breaking the tension. And yeah. I think it's because even someone who is like a very intense feminist or whatever, you know, maybe that's not his ideal audience, but you know, he doesn't get to control people who listen to his content. Mm-hmm. That's him trying to at least be like, it's okay. I don't really want to hit women. Please just don't send me emails. Yeah. That's the impression I get.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing that I found, it's like, there's bits of his that I really love and there's bits of his that just don't land, but I'm very much of the opinion it's not because they're bad. It's not, it's just, I am not the audience. And in this album, I found it pretty much landed because like universally, because whenever he went down these threads, it wasn't about like violence against women. It wasn't about violence against women. It was about toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. And that was his thread, but he was phrasing it in a way that would land and maybe make somebody like go, oh, wait a sec. If they were the kind of person that had those thoughts, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's also about expressing pent up frustration.
Yeah.
You know, when anger builds, you just want to snap. And when you picture yourself snapping, you're probably going to picture yourself snapping in the worst way possible.
Yeah.
You know, and how we feel in relationships. And it is through the lens of the relationship he has with his girlfriend, soon to, you know, eventual wife. But like, that's pretty relatable across the board. Like you get frustrated with your friends where you just want to shake them. You get frustrated with your parents where you just want to like, you just want to snap. So it is like toxic masculinity in the sense that it's like being pent up. And it, with, when it comes to toxic masculinity, when it, like a lot of people do get to that point where they mm-hmm. snap and kill someone due to a road rage incident, domestic violence, you know, intimate partner violence. Like, yeah, those are like very, you know, those are very real things. And when I hear these jokes, I can't help but like, be like, oh, we're getting so close to like that kind of territory, but at least we're laughing at the expense of it.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like he's doing material that in less artful hands, like would be just edgelord nonsense. But
it gets there so often.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But the thing is, he has that art. He has that ability to pull it back before it gets too bad, before, or disarm it and send people in the, like, he has the entire sort of middle section about, you know, how people just want, like, men just want to, like, he uses the F word a lot, but he's saying, like, that's because we're programmed not to, like, to laugh and love and cry and hug. Like, you know, you get a banana pancake and you die of a heart attack and your friends are calling you names. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's the thread there. It's not that, oh, using that language is cool. It's that we're so messed up, we don't know how to express it.
Yeah, the pumpkin joke is pretty funny.
Yes, I love the pumpkin joke.
It's so, and like also like the jealousy that his girlfriend is able to just be like, I want it. Like, and when he does the voice, it kills me. Like the girlfriend voice is so funny. Oh, maybe I'll get a pumpkin. And he wants, and he's so jealous that she can just say that without the little voice in the back of her head.
Yeah.
I think it's really effective joke telling. It's funny. It's like he gets really into like the fantasy of just like imagine if you, but then it's like the reality of it is you absolutely can't do that.
Yeah. And one of the, like, so do you have a favorite joke or a favorite bit on the
yeah,
special?
I do. As much as I love the, you know, the pumpkin stuff and the when he's like, the guy asks him if he wants, oh, do you want a cookie? I'm like, I know that's happening in a subway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. As much as I love that, my favorite section, I have two, I'll just briefly touch on both. Mm-hmm. The part where he's talking about like how chain restaurants, retail places, mm-hmm. and like the self-checkout, I think really that like chunk is really one big joke just about how it's gotten worse to go to businesses.
Yeah.
Like chain businesses, how the restaurant is like the whole thing with, it's like you're running a marathon. I find that part so funny. And it's all because like one guy says like, oh, you add the mayonnaise yourself. He's like, really? Do I have to add the mayonnaise? And then I throw it to my mom. Like it's, that's really funny. The part about having to give, like if you go buy something from like a, you know, a retail place, they want your phone number and it's like, oh, we're not going to do anything with it. It's like, that's bullshit. And it's like, well, I have to put something in, then lean on the keyboard. I was like, that is so funny. And then he closes it with the self-checkout part. And like, I mean, I think now self-checkout is taking over everything. I don't know about you, but most grocery stores here, they have one poor guy doing the cash and they have like 10 self-checkouts and it's an absolute nightmare. Like I want a follow-up joke from Bill Burr about this, but just about how he's like, oh, they really just want you to show up, you pick out your crap, you ring it in yourself, you beg yourself, and then you get the fuck out of my store. Like that is really how it feels. So that whole part is my favorite. And then I love the story about adopting the pit bull. That is, I honestly, that could have been the closer. I like a good long story like that as a closer. Mm-hmm. But so that's, those two are my favorite sections of the special.
Yeah. I love both of those sections. The pit bull story is one of my favorite as well. I'd say it is my, because it's just such a, like a, it's funny, but it's touching at the same time, which is such a good way to have gone out.
And like, he shows like some sensitivity towards this dog that has been adopted, and all the jokes about rescue dogs are spot on.
Yes. Yeah.
So good. Like you could never make a joke about rescue dogs without like, oh, did you get rescued from a burning building? Like being in the back of your head.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like he went for the free dog.
That's what it goes to. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the other bits that I really liked is how he tackled racism there, where he's like,
that
is so good. It's just
there's a lot of Asian people in this restaurant.
Yeah, like It's just such a, and it's like, you know, that's not racist. That's an observation. Yeah. And it's like, it's like, and it speaks to like the hypersensitivity. But then he is like, this is how it would be racist. It's like, if there's a lot of.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Asian people.
Oh my God. It is so funny the way he says it and like the difference between how white people point out how like people's race and how everyone else does. Like, we just sound racist just because of the sentence structure.
Yes.
Oh, it's so good. Like, it's so funny.
And it's and that's like the nuance there. Like, the just like you said, the sentence structure component. It's like, yeah, I never really thought of it before, but it's so right. Like, you just flip the expletive around, and it's like, I mean, it's still not great, but it's much less racist kind of thing.
It's, yeah. No, it really is. And also, the joke about, like, Asian people driving.
Yes.
And he's like, it's either one or the other. It's either Tokyo drifting or you're stopped at an intersection. That kills me. I'm sorry. It's just like, it feels wrong, but it is funny. And I think that is a really fun place to be. And a lot of comedians try and they really fail.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think That's the thing. You got to know if you can do it. And it's not something you can do overnight. It's not something you can get to just out of the gate. It takes years of practice and years of honing your craft.
Yeah. And the writing matters so much. The like in his other joke, like the sentence structure, the way you're saying things matters so much, because if it's just like a white dude talking about Asian people driving or women driving or this, that, or the other, like the way he balances it by being like, here's like proof that they're not all bad drivers. And then even making the joke that like they're bad drivers as a choice because they're bored, like they're too smart. You know, it's like, it's teetering the line. It's getting close, but it's so successful that it doesn't cross it.
Yeah. And One of the things I also love, and he's kind of carried forward, is like his like, I'm so full of shit, but you're listening to me, and he hears that, that's that big bit, which, you know, like you said, I would love to hear his thoughts now about like checking stuff about, you know, the plague, because he has an entire thing. I'm like, ooh,
that has. That I was thinking that today. I was like, well, he got his plague. He got what he asked for, and it didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. But the funny, like, I was like, I mean, I knew he wasn't anti-vax. I knew that. But I was like, what has he actually said? And I found this interview that he did with Joe Rogan, where he's basically.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. He's just like, we don't know what the fuck we're talking about. And it's like, that's perfect.
I'm not going to listen to you with no medical degree while I talk with no medical degree, while we're both smoking cigars and you're sitting in front of an American flag.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That was
the perfect
really
way to shut
funny.
Down Joe.
That's the kind of person I think he is.
Yeah.
You know, like he has his thoughts and feelings and opinions and, you know, those are whatever. He has every right to have them, but he's also not going to, he's not going to claim anything more than that is what it is.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want to be told what to say, what to think, what opinions to have. But he's also not going to be like, this is the end all be all opinion, which I feel like a lot of stand-up comedians really do, like, kind of, I don't know, they take themselves a bit too seriously.
Yeah. They you know, I mean, they forget that they're just a human with an opinion and a lot of other people have opinions. And there's a balance in every situation, of course. But yeah, I don't think if you ever sat down with him, I think he's the kind of person who would have anybody could have a perfectly good conversation with. Because he just seems to be not full of crap.
Yeah. But he also knows what it means to be a public figure.
Yeah.
He knows what he's willing to be said. He knows what he's willing to say on record. And then he knows when to say, I'm not. Because he also knows what kind of influence he has. Probably that people really take, like people are such big fans of him and Joe Rogan, that people are going to take what they say as gospel. They're going to use that. They might even use it word for word and repeat it when they're talking to other people. Mm-hmm. I think that was a really smart call in that interview to, well, not only like stop that train of thought, but he made it so funny too. Like that's his superpower.
Yeah. He's able to disarm people by making them laugh. And it's so easy to be sanctimonious, mm-hmm. but it's really hard to like, just what takes talent is to engage somebody who you probably disagree with, but get them to just step back because you're making them laugh so much. And mm-hmm. the entire time Joe was laughing. And it's kind of get that vibe here. Like that bit about suicide in the South where the woman is like, oh, well you can't get to heaven. It's like, geez.
How do you know that?
Yeah.
How do you know that? That is, oh my God. See, that's the thing with this special. Yes, I have my favorite bits, but then I can't not talk about every other joke. Every yeah. single one has its nuggets of just, like, I think that's the thing. Every single joke, it brings you to the brink of just, it's, they're just so funny. You know, they're just so good. Like the one where, you know, he's like listening to his neighbor talk about his hose and he talks about, can we just like hang this over my chimney and like tandem kill ourselves at the same time? That is so, oh my God. It's so fun. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And he goes dark without it ever really feeling dark, you know, like suicide. And so it's like, okay, it's edgy-ish, but it's not like uncomfortable in that way that if you feel like gross coming out of it, right?
Are we going to pretend that we don't all have those thoughts?
Yeah, everybody
does. Are we going to walk around being like, there are moments where I like have the most minor inconvenience and I want to jump in front of a bus or someone says something to me that's so stupid. I'm like, I can't live anymore. I can't. So I think it's totally fair. And it's human also. And it's fun to hear someone not be scared to admit their inner monologue in all honesty.
Yeah.
It's people try to pretend so hard to have it together, to be perfect, to have nothing to be ashamed of. And he is really, he'll set it up in like such a way, like this is what normal people act like or think is normal. We're just going about our lives this way and interacting with people like that when you're aware of what they're doing is like cringe or insane or like kind of phony, like, or just also kind of like seems fine on the outside, but deep down they hate themselves for picking this kind of life. The fact that he just like addresses those things so honestly. So you have like the two characters, right? You have him and the other person. So it's like the person who's kind of going, like his girlfriend just buying a pit bull that grew up like, And then there's his inner monologue. Like, so the pit bull is basically like a rescue dog that lived by a highway in Los Angeles. And she's like, isn't that sweet? He's like, isn't that sweet? This dog has been surviving on protein. It hasn't been, it's been choking out coyotes. Like, no, that's scary. So it's like such a fun juxtaposition of like the quote unquote normal person versus him.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And one of the things I love about the special of it, if you can watch it, is it in the credits, it ends with a picture of him and the AC/DC pumpkin. And then a picture of his dog. So it's like, these are real things. They're not imaginary. It's drawn from his life, which, you know, that's every comedian walks that line of, okay, where do I embellish and where do I, I keep it real and grounded. But it's like, it just shows like, yeah, this isn't just made up. He didn't just like pull these examples from nowhere. These are actual things in his life, which also makes it feel that much more special. I feel
you need that kernel of truth.
Yes.
Yeah. That little kernel of truth. But I honestly like it when the whole thing is true.
Yeah.
That just makes, I find that more fun. But also I find people get very hung up on trying to tell a story exactly as it is. And that including very like boring parts. And, I have newer comics asking me about these sorts of things. And I'm like, cut out the boring parts. Who cares? Who needs them? And then they're feel like, oh, like, I'm not really, well, I'm worried it's, like, not true enough. And I'm like, you just need the kernel. Like, the bigger the kernel is, the better. But, like, you just need that little bit. That phrase has, you know, that phrase is very true.
Yeah. I mean, when you're, like, writing an essay or something, you have more, it's all about format. Like, on stage, you need to get there and get to the funny much faster than on a page. Where you can sort of like take your time, set the scene, meander about little details.
Mm-hmm.
But like, and that's the thing. There's no fat in this special. There's wasted time. Like even when he's like on a tangent, is quick. And like where he's like gets distracted by something, like dropping the cap of the water bottle, and then he's like, oh, you know, if that water bottle cap was on the stage, special's over. I trip, fall, and I'll have to go home, kind of thing.
So yeah, exactly.
It makes these moments funny. Now,
that
how
makes it feel a little more loose, too, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I saw, oh, I can't remember his name, British comedian a few years ago. Whitehall? Whitechapel? I don't know.
Jack Whitehall?
Jack Whitehall.
That sounds...
Jack Whitehall, okay, yeah. And I mean, he was fine, but then I watched it and I was like, oh, this is fun. This is a good special that I saw live. And then I watched this. It's like literally word for word, even the like loose bits where he's like kind of riffing. I'm like, that just feels like over rehearsed to me, like that there's no variation. Like, I don't expect it to be massive variations, but even his like, oh, I absently forgot something. Let me try to go. It's just like, you got to find that middle ground. Like, you don't want it to be completely different, but you want it to feel organic and in the moment.
I know what you mean. I'm almost like, I find when people do that, I'm almost like a little impressed if they manage to make it seem organic when it's actually something they have planned. And I've seen comics recently who are pulling that off, where it's like the way their joke structure works is like the way they go from point A to point B is by doing something that seems off the cuff, and it's like built into the sentence structure. That I find pretty impressive, because that's because they've been doing it all over town or wherever, and it's been convincing every single time. But I think sometimes it can be when you're like pretending to make a mistake.
Yeah,
that's a little it's a little cringe.
It's just finding that balance, like you know, it's. And I mean, but if people like when people can nail the same set time after time after time, that is an impressive skill too. Because I know I could never do that. I'm always like drift a little this way, drift a little that way. But when people have it totally memorized in their head, word for word, that is an impressive skill. But yeah,
it's all impressive. Everything, even having the nerve to get up there, wild.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, have you felt Bill Burr's influenced your style or how you approach joke writing in any way?
not necessarily writing, but definitely performing. I find when he really goes off and gets loud, I don't hold back when I lean in when it comes to performing on stage. Like, I really do like to get very loud, and if I'm really, like, I riff a lot. Like, that is my favorite thing to do. My joke writing is not necessarily influenced by Bill Burr, but I would say that the closer I get to that kind of sort of like fake angry, I find the audience is very entertained by that, you know? Yeah. And so that's something that I've seen him do like a lot, and that he does that in this special where he's like, people are always asking me, why I'm yelling. And it's like, you think this is yelling? Yeah. So funny. Yeah, yeah. I think that's kind of the only influence. I guess I really do like the way he tells jokes. Like the exaggerations that he does. Okay, one sec. Get out of here. No. Fucking. That's it. I'm evicting my boyfriend from my apartment. He's out.
Oh, no.
He just came in to tease me, and I yelled at him. See? Bill Burr's influence.
Yeah.
Domestic violence will be happening after this podcast is done recording. I don't know if you noticed, there's a little cat.
Beautiful cat. What's her name?
His name is Rockwell. He is orange, and that's about it. That's all I know about him.
Well, Rockwell is a very cute cat.
Thank you very much.
My
two
boys.
It's hard to see.
Yeah, yeah, he's very blending it. He's blending in there, but yeah, I love my cats.
Cats are great. Oh my god, my cat is also a rescue. I didn't rescue him myself or anything, but someone did.
Somebody else pulled him out of a fire.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm trying to think where I was. Okay, so in terms of the joke structure that he, I admire it, and I feel like it's a useful one, and maybe I've applied it, but it's just like the rhythm that he goes to. And it's kind of like he'll start with, you know, the normal person or the normal point of view that people have or whoever he's talking about has, and then the reaction that he has, and it's just a staircase of exaggerations that you feel like he almost like falls down. That joke structure is pretty great. Like if it's just tag, and then you find like a really good spot to land. I don't think he invented that, but I hear it a lot in his comedy, and I think it's a very it's a very successful one.
Yeah. Well, I mean that makes sense too. Like as he said, like his first two like inspirations being Rodney Dangerfield and Eddie Murphy, they're both very rapid joke tellers.
Yeah, it's just one laugh after another.
Yeah, yeah. So very joke dense and very heavy punch. But I really appreciate you suggesting this album because, like, again, like I've never actually listened to this album before or watched the special. I like Bill Burr is one of those people I've like I really respect, but I'm like a lot of his jokes don't land for me. But I loved this special from front to back.
This is a beginning to end hilarious comedy special. It is, I would say it's my second favorite, the first favorite, and I didn't pick it because I don't think it's as funny, but I told you this already. I was choosing between this and the Rosie O'Donnell's A Heartfelt Stand-Up. If you have a chance to watch that, it is quite special. It's a special special. But I think this is, of all my favorite stand-up specials that I like, this is the funniest.
Well, if you ever feel like coming back and talking about Rosie O'Donnell's special.
I would love to.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, if people wanted to find you online, where can they look?
You can find me at The Lucy Gervais Show on Instagram. I post my show dates there pretty regularly. If you're ever in Montreal, The second Sunday of every month, I have a show at the Wiggle Room called The Lucy Show. We are a stand-up show with a little bit of burlesque, and we give away really cool prizes every month. So please, if you can check me out live. I just gave you all the info to do so.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Hopefully we'll have some folks coming out to your show. So thanks That'd for cool. joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Comedy Album Book Club, a Far From Here comedy and showbizmonkeys.com co-production. Music today was performed and produced by Glenn Beauchamp, Tim Matthews, Edith Falkenberg, and Jim Spruill, also known as the Something Something Quartet. Thanks for listening and tune in next week to Comedy Album Book Club.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.